Hi, everyone. Welcome to your first podcast of the MedSurg class. This is Carrie, and I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about organ transplantation. If you're following along in your textbook or like to refer to your textbook, that actually starts on page 219. So let's talk a little bit before we get into the slides just about what organ transplantation is. Basically, organ transplantation is when they take an organ or part of an organ from one person and transplant it into the next person. They generally occur from many different body systems. There's also a picture in your textbook on page 220 that shows all the different areas or different organs that can be transplanted, or even parts of organs. I know with the liver and even the lungs, they don't transfer generally or transplant the entire liver or lungs. They only transplant part of the liver and the lungs, or a segment of it. Donors for organ transplantation are either alive, they're living donors. Generally, the living donors are relatives or very close kin because of all the matching and genetic testing, that's from earlier in class today. But they just have to have a match of their blood and the different antibodies and proteins within their blood so we can avoid a transplant rejection from occurring. But so they can come from a living donor or they can come from a cadaver. We generally get bones, tissues, corneas, the non-living tissues in our body from a cadaver. We can only have, or you can only donate your heart, your lungs, your liver, your true organs that need blood and oxygen to survive from a donor that has been on life support and may be considered brain dead because we are still pumping blood to those organs so they're still viable and healthy. So when you sign your donor card, many of you probably have done that already or may be thinking about having it when you get your driver's license renewed, having that box checked. But that box basically means you probably, if you pass away, you probably won't be able to donate your heart, lungs, and liver unless you're in a bad accident and are on life support. But otherwise, that box does allow you to donate what tissues are available to you. What a lot of people don't know or understand about that little checkbox on their driver's license is that even though you say you want to be a donor, when you actually have passed away, it's your next of kin that make that decision, even if you have your box checked. So it's really important to make sure that your family is aware of your decision and what you would like to do so they can make the plans accordingly with your wishes. So I want to talk about briefly about tissue typing. Before a transplant actually can occur, there are many different typings and blood cross-matching that they have to do. HLA typing is done as well. It's a degree of matching where they actually take the different antigens on the different cells and they have to match them from the donor to the transplant recipient. There's also, they do a panel of reactive antibodies. Sometimes you'll see that PRA. This indicates the recipient's sensitivity to various HLAs that we just talked about before receiving a transplant. So they test how sensitive the donor or the recipient's body is going to be to the donor's antigens. They also do cross-match of serums, and I talked briefly about that. So they do various testing, and with the advancement of all of the different types of testing, any more acute rejection or hyperacute rejection is very rare because they do a very good job of trying to make as much match within the two different parties involved as possible. There are different types of transplants, and I'm back on slide number 2 now as I'm talking to you about this. There are autografts. An autograft is a transplant of the client's own tissue from one part of the body to the next. Obviously, since it's its own person who's donating to itself or just transplanting it in a different place in their body, it is the most successful. These can be skin grafts or bone marrow transplants can be done. An isograft is when the bone marrow and the recipient are identical twins. An allograft is a graft between members of the same species but who have different genotypes in HLA. So living donors, again, allografts, this is when we have a relative or someone who's very closely related. That's the most successful. Cadaver also fits into the allograft column. Generally, ligaments, valves are the most common things transplanted here. A xenograft
transplant actually comes from an animal species to humans. Pig skin is used to cover burns. Sometimes they'll even use different valves within an animal heart to help repair the valves in a human heart. So those are typically what we see most frequently there. I want to spend a little bit of time on transplant rejection because that's possibly what we're going to see in the med-surg care. Not the hyperacute. The first one is the hyperacute one. And that actually is on the next slide on the next page. This is very rare, and generally it occurs because there was a mismatch with some of their typing that had occurred originally. So the only way to fix a hyperacute reaction, and this they will see immediately after the transplant occurs. So there's still, it's just hours after the new organ has been transplanted, the body is going to start to react. That's a hyperacute tissue rejection. The only way to fix this is to get the organ or tissue out of the body. So they need to remove it. The other thing that they sometimes see is graft versus host disease. That's what the GVHD stands for. In your textbook, it talks about graft versus host disease on page 223. This basically occurs when an immunodeficient patient receives immunocompetent cells. Basically, the donated tissue rejects the host tissue. So it's a little bit backwards as you think about it, but it can happen. Generally, they don't see this until 7 to 30 days after the transplantation. And once this reaction starts, really very little can be done to alleviate it. The best mechanism, again, possibly is to remove it. Some of the things we're also going to see most frequently with graft versus host disease is infection. And so they will watch for that from that organ if it starts to get an infection. The other type of reaction is an acute tissue rejection. Rejection. This acute rejection generally comes anywhere from 1 to 3 months post-transplant. The textbook says it can be sometime within the first 6 months. So anytime within that time frame, that's known as acute. It can either be an antibody-mediated or a cell-mediated rejection. The patient, what are they going to present with? These are things you might see. Fever, redness, swelling, and tenderness over the graft site. We also, depending if it was an organ, we're going to see signs of that organ failure. So we would figure out if the organ was failing by looking at lab values that the body produces based on that organ. We would look at biopsies of that tissue as well. So there's things we can look at to make that identification. There's going to be an increased immunosuppression. If they have that, we're going to obviously want to do more suppression than what we already are. They'll use steroids, cyclosporins, monoclonal antibodies, and anti-myphocytic globulins, and they can often save the organ. So just because they had an acute rejection doesn't mean they can't keep that organ that has been transplanted. They'll do all they can. And we're going to talk about those medications a little bit more in just a little bit. The other type of rejection that you might see is a chronic tissue rejection. This can occur anywhere months or years after the organ has been transplanted. And it's basically chronic inflammation. And once that organ or that tissue starts to become inflamed, scar tissue is going to develop or fibrosis. And then when the scar tissue continues to grow, then it's going to cause a lack of blood flow and ischemia. So this leads to gradual organ deterioration, and it's unique in its presence is based on the organ that's transplanted. So it's not going to look the same in every person who's had an organ transplantation done. Eventually, they are going to need retransplantation, but they will try to see how that organ is doing and make sure they can get the most out of it. But they have to go back on a transplant waiting list. Sometimes patients can be on those lists for months to years, and some patients even die waiting on those lists. So it can be very heartbreaking and sad for them as well. So if someone has a tissue transplant, what are we going to do for them? I'm on slide 7. The overall goal of pre and post transplant care is to reduce the risk of tissue rejection or graft versus host disease. So again, on the slide, I kind of reiterated again what we're going to think about, what they're going to do pre-transplant. And then post-transplant, we're going to monitor that organ very closely. Ultrasound or MRI. They can do tissue biopsies. They're going to obviously look at lab values that can reflect the specific transplant that was done. Medications that they can use prior to treatment, antibiotics and antivirals. Then they also can use some Bactrim, acyclovir, or gingcyclovir, and they all protect against different viruses and antibodies, organisms, bacteria that actually people have in their body. And so what this does is just helps prevent any initial reaction from occurring. Now I want to talk about some of the post-tissue transplant medications. Once a tissue has been transplanted into that body, the client needs to be put on some pretty heavy-duty immunosuppressants. And in your textbook on page 222, there is a drug table there. On this slide, I apologize for that. I decided not to give out a handout for the medications. And the medication book I frequently use is the publisher or the author of that book is Laney. And so you'll see I forgot to take that out when I decided not to give that handout. So I apologize for that confusion. But all the medication, what you need to know, is found in your Lewis textbook on page 222, table 14-16. Some of the most common drugs we're going to see used are corticosteroids, prednisone, solumedrol fall into that category. It's important that when we think about those, we look at the side effects, things that we have to watch for when they're on that. Okay. We talked about the increased risk for infection with immunocompromised. Corticosteroids also cause hyperglycemia, and a lot of times we don't always think about that, but that's a big one to remember. It causes blood sugars to rise. They're going to have easy bruising, delayed healing, possibly even hypertension and peptic ulcers from that, depending on the route we give it. So things to think about with prednisone or solumedrol. Sandimmune and Prograf fall into the calcineurin inhibitors. Those, again, are pretty common ones that we will see. The thing to think about with these is they're very nephrotoxic, meaning they're very harmful to the kidneys. So when we are giving these, we're going to be checking our kidney labs, and those are, hopefully you've filled in your thoughts there, but we're going to be looking at a BUN, a creatinine. We're going to look at the urine osmolality and osmolarity, making sure that we're actually there's the right concentration of urine. See if it starts to spill proteins. Also look at our electrolytes because the kidneys are major regulators of our electrolytes as well. So we'll look at all of that if they're on Sandimmune or Prograf. The other one are cytotoxic drugs. Celcept, Imuran are in that next section. Those are two of the most common ones that we see. Bone marrow suppression with Imuran, neutropenia, thrombocytopenia. So we're looking at decrease in the white blood cells. Again, that goes with immunocompromised that we see that. With the Celcept, looking back up at that one, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, again, severe neutropenia, thrombocytopenia, increased risk for infection. So we have to watch these patients closely. Other meds that are not given as frequently but can be used as well, monoclonal antibodies, and it lists some there, the polyclonal antibody, there, and then there's something under other. Again, there's a lot of meds there. The ones that I would like you to focus on or think most about are the prednisone or solumedrol, Sandimmune, Prograf, Celcept, and Imuran. All right. On the next slide, it talks about nursing diagnosis and interventions for tissue transplantation. When we're thinking about organ rejection, we need to think about ineffective protection because the body is not able to protect itself well from the new transplanted organ. So what can we do to help prevent any infection, any compromise to that patient's immune system is what we need to think about here. So good hand hygiene and hand washing. Watch that patient for signs and symptoms of infection. But the infection is going to look different. Remember, we talked about when they're immunocompromised and we know they're going to be on an immunosuppressive medication of some sort, their infection may be a low temperature or under normal. So if they are even running low, we need to start to be concerned. They may need reverse or protective isolation. We're going to make sure they have adequate nutrition, good mouth care, monitor for potential side effects of the medications we just talked about. All of those things we need to think about. There's also a risk for impaired tissue integrity with the allograft. So we're going to give the immunosuppressive medication, watch for rejection, monitor lab work, assess for the graft versus host disease, and then it shows a whole bunch of side effects that you might see with graft versus host disease listed there. Maculopapular rash, erythema, hair loss, abdominal cramping and diarrhea, jaundice, elevated liver enzymes, and an elevated bilirubin level. The last slide talks about anxiety, death versus rejection. I briefly mentioned earlier that patients can be on waiting lists for very long periods of time. Some patients even have to pick up and move to a different state or move to a different city so they're closer to where the transplant can occur. Because once an organ is available, it generally has to be transplanted within a certain amount of hours in order to still be viable. So patients don't have a lot of time to make arrangements. Things can happen quite quickly. In one of my classes I was teaching, I had an older gentleman there, and his 18-year-old daughter, somebody who's your age, was born with multiple heart defects, and she had actually gone into acute heart failure at the age of 18 and was put on a heart transplant list. And it's been just a blessing from God. This summer she received the call that she was able to get a heart. And she is now living an amazing life with a brand new heart. So sometimes we think these things can be so far from us, and yet God shows his handiwork sometimes quite near to us as well. But there can be a lot of emotions that the patient goes through when we have these thoughts occurring, death versus rejection. Somebody has to die for me to live sometimes, depending on what organ it is. So they feel guilt. They feel, if they get the organ, sometimes they feel survivor's guilt. So they need to, a lot of times, go to counseling as well to help get over that. We need to allow those patients, when they are on a transplant list or if they have received a transplant, to be able to talk about it, to communicate about it, assess their level of anxiety, encourage involvement in their care, encourage their family members to be involved. What kind of coping is out there? Are there support groups out there? Maybe the family member of the person who has donated is willing to reach out and make a connection with that patient who has received the organ. And that's really amazing when that can happen. But that is up to the family member who is donating if they are interested in that. We also need to think about reducing or eliminating any environmental stressors, assisting with stress reduction and relaxation techniques, and again, arrange for a specialist because this is not our area of specialty, but we do need to provide care to these patients when they are in the hospital or in home care. And so we never know when we may run into someone who needs us to be there and listen and assess their level of anxiety. And that concludes our discussion on organ transplantation. If you have any questions about any of this content, please do not hesitate to ask. And have a wonderful weekend if you're listening to it on the Labor Day weekend holiday. All right. Let me know if you have questions. Good night.